Okay, here we go. Kicking off another week on Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart. Bourne, you can just clam up and park it here for this beginning of the program.
Never.
Quiet, you. Stewie. So the Islanders win the first game. John Bartlett.
Shocker, no.
Bottom of
not
the
a shocker.
Hold on. 2-1. So the Islanders draw first blood on this one. Barzal's a highlight. Ryan Pulak's a highlight. Semyon Varlamov is a highlight. For anyone who was around Justin Bourne yesterday, during or immediately after this game, Stewie, how insufferable do you think Bourne was? Like, how annoying do you think it was to be around Bourne yesterday as his Isles took game one?
Oh yeah, I think he walked down Queen Street in his jersey and was shouting to the heavens, saying Islanders in 3.5. So, but again, yeah. it's a clinic, and you gotta respect the way that the Islanders are playing. And you know, to us, it's no surprise because you know we had Coach Barry Trotz on our show. And he talked about, you know, last year, you know, he didn't really coach the group the way that they needed to be coached, and he makes adjustments, and he likes to make adjustments on the fly, and he just doesn't have one set system for, you know, all his teams. Each team is individual, and now he's getting the most out of this group. So it's great that you get to sort of get into these coaches' minds on how they coach, but they're playing this system to a T, and so far it's working for the Islanders.
They just don't let you up off the mat once they have you down. And they don't really, I mean, they start the game by just trying to suffocate you. And it's working. 2-1 is the final score yesterday. Islanders up 1-0 on the series. All right, Bourne, have at it. As objective as you can be. And I guess,
you
really,
know,
like in our lives, all we can do is sort of recognize where our bias is. But still, as objectively as you can, what happened yesterday? Islanders, 1-0 series lead, 2-1 is the game.
Do you know how many rush chances Tampa Bay had yesterday? Do you
I
know?
Saw this. Mike Kelly put this out there yesterday
yes.
on Twitter. Zero.
Zero.
That's insane. How do
and
you
the
do
New York
that
Islanders,
Tampa?
And New York Islanders had 9. They out-rush chanced them 9-0, which is, I don't know. But, you know, when you have coaches and you're playing pro hockey, and Stu, you'll know all about this, and they tell you defense leads to offense. Just be in your defensive structure and your chances will come. You be patient and you'll get looks the other way. Because teams get frustrated. They don't get anything and they start trying to open it up. All of a sudden Stamkos tries to make a cross-ice pass just inside the blue line. You get one going the other way. 9-0. And people call the Islanders boring. The team with the most rush chances in a single game in this postseason is the Islanders. 13 rush chances in one game in this postseason. Like they're playing their system, man. They are comfortable in their skin. They will wait you out.
Stewie, you have a thought on that? The defensive structure leading to offensive chances?
Yeah, you just see the D and Pulak and Pelech and Letty and Mayfield, these guys just making those, you know, those great passes at the right time. And like you said, they don't make the right play, they make the better play. And, you know, the prime example was them springing Barzal for that first goal. That was a perfect pass, just right through traffic for that half breakaway there, too. So, you know, I want this to sort of be, you know, a testament to sort of all these coaches that are out there now saying, well, I don't have the horses, I don't have the superstars, I don't have guys that can score 50 goals, I can't win. Look at the clinic that the Islanders are putting on, and they do not. They have maybe a budding superstar in, you know, Matthew Barzal, but this team is not. This team is a team, not a club, and everybody is contributing. That's how you win.
If Matthew Barzal, oh, sorry, go ahead, Bourne.
No, go ahead, Jeff.
All yours.
Okay, I was just going to say, you know, to Stewie's point about full team, their group of forwards last night, so we've talked a lot about the Toronto Maple Leafs on this show, Mitch Marner playing about 25 minutes a game. The Islanders last game had 10 of their 12 forwards play between 13 and 17 minutes. 10 of their 12. So one guy was less than that number. Matt Martin played 11.5 minutes or so. And then one guy was over at Pageau. Pageau played about 19 and change. But other than that, everyone just kind of goes over the boards. You know, like, talk about a team not dependent on one group. It's wild.
You know, I wonder, too, just on Matthew Barzal as well. And listen, he scores yesterday. Ryan Pulak, I got a point I want to make about him as well. I wonder how, like, you always wonder, like, can this player fit anywhere else? And if so, how do we talk about him? What is his impact on the game? How do you think we look at Matthew Barzal if he plays on, like, the Avalanche? Or if he plays on Tampa? Or if he plays on Toronto? Or if he plays on Vegas? like a more up-tempo team. Not that it really matters in the grand scheme of things. I just look at Matthew Barzal and I say, the points are good, but by the standard that he could probably set for himself, they're kind of pedestrian. Like on a more up-tempo squad, I see this guy putting up crazy numbers. Mm-hmm. Do you think we look at him different if he plays on a different team?
You know, probably, but I think that, you know, context is so important. You're a hockey player. Your job is to help your hockey team win games, and he's playing a style that allows his team to succeed because he's not the weak link in the chain. He's not taking those chances for, you know, to rush out of position for a potential break. It's, you know, he may be able to get more, but in terms of raw points, but he's doing more for a team and becoming a better player by playing the way he is. So he's a nice fit with, he also benefits that everyone else is always in their position. So he's the guy who's allowed to jump and try to get behind the D. That frees him up a little bit in the Islanders system.
What do you think?
Yeah. If you put him on in Edmonton, he's putting up 80, 90 points. He's a point of game player. And you notice his rushes and his entries. Unlike some of the other stars, he's doing it from the flank. He knows that, you know what, I don't really want to be turning pucks over in the middle because that's the system. So he does the best to his ability within the confines of the system. And, you know, you noticed that especially in the third period, he was getting pucks in deep. You know, he was twisting and turning and protecting the puck and sticking his leg out, playing that power forward hockey. And I'm telling you, that's going to go on, a long way for his career where he's going to learn to adapt and put up points under this system. But for now, right now, it's about winning. And, you know, he's doing whatever it takes to win, and he's looking good while doing it.
Denny Savard. I see a lot of Denny Savard in Matthew Barzal. When he starts circling around the offensive zone, looking for lanes, there may not be anyone better in the game than Matthew Barzal at doing that.
I Ryan see Kapo Kakko.
What's that?
World championship Kakko Kapo.
He was outstanding. Yes, very, very, very fair. The other guy that I want to get to here is Ryan Pulock. So Ryan Pulock, as we all know, I remember watching him with the Brandon Wheat Kings every now and then. Whenever we do a Wheat Kings game on Sportsnet, and this guy could just hammer it. He still can. Like, he's one of the hardest shooters in the NHL. You saw it yesterday, where point blank, like, he just puts that puck through Vasilevsky. Like, just a hard shot by a strong man who knows how to shoot a puck. That's Ryan Pulock. We've talked about this before. Whether you have time for the All-Star game or you don't have time for the All-Star game, the skills competition is always interesting. I would love to see Ryan Pulock in the hardest shot competition. And much like we talk about bringing in specialists to compete against, you know, to compete against Connor McDavid in the fastest skater competition. I would love to see guys that can just flat out hammer it, compete against Chara and Weber and the other guys that can really blast it. I would put Ryan Pulock right in there with all those guys. Just one of the hardest shots in the league, period. Borny.
Well, I was thinking about, like, if you look around the league and say, who are the players that have special, like, unique attributes? Like, McDavid starting, yeah, he's one of them, for sure. Like, McDavid starting from his own zone. I think Barzal and his shiftiness is up there, but, like, some of the raw skills. Pulock, for me, in terms of just raw slapshot power, I mean, that goal itself was just, he got to lean into one, step into it, slide back, set up, and shoot one, and it was just too hard. It was just too hard for Vasilevsky to handle. But it is funny that both their goals came on really their two special skills that they have. You know, you're not going to get Pulock bomb goals all the time, but, you know, they cashed in on their two special strengths last game.
They really did.
Yeah, and I think Vasilevsky like underrated the power of that shot because he was, you know, he was squared to the puck. He wasn't screened. There was no sticks in the way. He saw that. But I think he underrated the power of that shot. And, you know, we talk about, Nick Robertson and Junior shooting through the goalie. He pounded that through the goalie. So I think that's what makes it even more impressive. It was Vasilevsky, the best goalie in the world, squared to the shooter, and he still put it through him.
Has there a guy, Stewie, let me ask you this one. Is there a guy in your hockey past, Borny, maybe you've come across a guy like this as well, who's never going to go to an All-Star game, but when you look at that one special skill, and we'll just talk about hardest shot here because of the obvious example of Ryan Pulock. Is there one guy, Stewie and Borny, Anthony, we'll start with you, that could hammer it like nobody else but wasn't going to an All-Star game? Like Andy Delmore might have been that guy.
Well,
for some people.
There was a guy that went to the All-Star game, I think. for me, it's got to be Byfuglien. And I think Byfuglien did go to an all-star game. But when I say his shot was a weapon, it was a weapon. And I had to stand in front of the net on the power play for a full year, and he'd be ripping it head high. And when he hit you, he would laugh. And he would smoke you in practice and be like, well, don't stand in front of the way. I'm shooting the puck. I don't care.
What? So, what?
It's funny, though, but he got mad because he fired it one time, and it bounced off of Hillier's head. And it was going in the net, and I actually tapped it in. So I actually took a goal away from him. So I think for the rest of the year, he's like, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to kill Stewie in front. So trust me, standing with no visor in front of that net, big buff, there's not very many people that you describe their shot as a weapon. His shot was a weapon. A weapon. Heavy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I can't quite hang with that. My two experiences with it are just watching Jarome Iginla and Summer Shinny shoot snapshots that, like, sounded like the entire arena was going to come apart when he hit the glass behind the net. Just so heavy, yeah. With such a casual emotion. And then a really obscure one, the guy who definitely didn't go to All-Star Games, Marc-Andre Bergeron, was a New York Islander about a decade ago. He had a sneaky bomb. One of those guys just didn't get a chance to use it enough, but he could kill it.
What do you guys make of, even before the game starts, there's Patrick Maroon and Ross Johnston playing the center ice game. Maroon sliding his butt over the red line, Johnston making sure that one of his feet is over. I don't know. I think a lot of people look at it and go, oh, that's just, this is just stupid. But then in a hockey sense, like... If you follow this dumb sport for long enough, you know exactly what the two of them are doing. Stewie, what did you make of that? Pat Maroon, Ross Johnston. Johnston, by the way, hasn't played since early May. He's not getting in the lineup, but he's doing his enforcing along the red line in warm-up.
Yeah, it's definitely a war of attrition. It's the game within the game, and you do whatever you can to sort of get an edge. And I'm sure you're just trying to see, hey, let's feel them out here. If I go a little bit overboard, are they going to match that intensity? And that's another thing, too, with this Tampa Bay team. They're pretty gritty. Remember them last year in the playoffs against Islanders? They put a couple of guys out of the game, out of the series. So they're not a pushover. So I think it's just sort of battling, you know, that war of attrition to see what you can get edgewise. But I'll tell you this, like, you know, I remember that reminds me when I was in the minors and Dennis Bonvie used to be on the line and he never played. He played like four games in the season and he was on the line just chirping. I'm like, dude, you're not even playing. And he's like, well, do you want me to play? I can insert myself into the lineup right now if you like. And I'm like, no. And I just like skated away because I honestly thought he was going to put himself in to come beat me up. So, yeah, it's just the game within the game and it's part of hockey for sure.
I got my little cheesy two cents is like sometimes I think for certain players, and I don't know if it's the case for Ross Johnston, but it's a case of trying to make yourself relevant. You know, like if that's your role is you're the guy who stirs stuff up while, you want to push the series in that direction to one towards animosity and whatever. I don't think it makes a difference to the players who are playing 20 minutes a night.
You know, I wonder too, and maybe I'm reading way too much into this, but Barry Trotz grew up in the era in the Western League. So this is like late 70s, early 80s, where he had coaches like Bill LaForge, okay? Legendary, tough slash crazy coach. And listen, like Barry Trotz as a defenseman was like a really tough, raw-boned defenseman for the Regina Pats. Like he's like lovable Barry Trotz. We love having him on. He's got a wonderful sense about him, you know, enjoys a good chocolate lava. When that guy played, especially in the Western League, Barry Trotz was a nasty bit of business. Like, he was tough. And he had coaches, mentioned Bill LaForge. He also had Brian Murray, who wasn't shy about physical hockey. He had another coach by the name of Jack Sangster. Sangster bounced around the Western Hockey League. Would have also coached Seattle, coached that Regina Pats team. His teams were always nicknamed Sangster's Gangsters because he always had a tough squad. But the toughest team in that era were the New Westminster Bruins. And they had some big, tough boys, Harold Philippoff and Barry Beck. And there was one guy by the name of Boris Fistrick. And you guys probably remember his son, Mark Fistrick, who played in the NHL.
Oh, he was at Islanders camp, so I was.
Mark Fistrick was?
Yeah.
Nice. And he was pretty tough himself, too. But Father Boris, who's no longer with us, I remember Kelly Rudy telling me this story. So whenever the New Westminster Bruins would come to town, Kelly was on a very young Medicine Hat Tigers team. So Kelly was like 16 or 17 years old. And like this team from New West, you know, all the guys are like 19, 20 years old. They're driving Camaros and they have mustaches and beards and they're smoking cigarettes. And like, it's like, who are we playing against here? And Kelly would tell me that a couple of times during warm-up, and this is before they even had officials out there, so this really is the Wild West, Boris Fistrick would take the puck and skate in and take shots on Kelly in the Medicine Hat Tiger. I'd come in and like rifle shots at him and then go back to the New West Zone, grab a puck and come back and do it all over again. He would also, if that wasn't enough, occasionally skate behind Kelly, take the net off the moorings, drag it to center ice, and stand beside it, daring any of the Medicine Hat Tigers to do something about it, to come get your net for warm-up. And this is a very young Medicine Hat Tigers team. And I remember asking Kelly, I'm like, well, Kelly, what did you guys do? And he said, nothing. We skated off. These guys were crazy. We just left the ice. And so that's why I wonder if somewhere in the back of, and I would love to ask Barry Trotz this next time we have him on, in the back of his mind, he's seeing Ross Johnston at the line yesterday doing stretching and sticking your leg over and beaking at people and talking to Pat Maroon and all that, if in the back of his mind he's thinking of the good old days of the late 70s, early 80s with Sangster's Gangsters and Boris Fistruck and the land of the wild, wild west and the Western Hockey League. As much as we think of Barry Trotz as a very progressive, you know, new schoolish kind of coach who's had a lot of success, Barney, he still has that in his background, right?
Well, yeah, and, you know, he would be familiar with intimidation as a tactic. You know, that, you know, part of the reason the Islanders brought back Matt Martin and, you know, paid Ross Johnston is they want teams to know that it's just not going to be easy. So I guess that could be part of the early game thinking. Just, hey, we are going to be here and in your face if you would like to invite us into something more physical. We're happy to.
Yeah, but that part of the game is not fun in any sense of the words. And this is coming from a guy that played many years in Rochester. And you have to go into Syracuse and look at Nasty Marasti and Darcy Vareau or Yablonski and Bigminton, where some of these guys, like, you know, I always use the term, they don't ruin your night. They can ruin your year or your career, where they can break your face. So you got to tread carefully against those guys because, you know, those shenanigans, some of those guys, like for me, I'm out the line. I'm like, well, I don't want to take a 2-minute penalty or a 10-minute and put my team down a man. So you sort of just do some semantics, but there's some guys, they legit do not care. So I think those guys may be gone out of the game, but back then some guys, they'll ruin the game and make a mockery of the game. So I'm getting a little bit nervous talking about it because it brings me back to my days in the good old Rochester.
Some bad memories there. You ever grab a puck and go shoot on the opposing goalie in warm up, whether it's in the American League or in junior? Did you ever see it? God, did you ever see it happen, Stewie? Did you ever see it happen?
No.
I kept a
But I heard about. I remember Biss Nasty. I remember Biss Nasty, and it was a rumor, but we heard it was true. I think we got video We got video of it that he was actually skating around in warm up. I think in the East Coast with a WWF belt on, like saying that he was the champ. So he actually had the belt on the ice during warm-up. So I'm like, there's no way. But there was actually footage back then confirming that he was doing push-ups with the belt.
That is amazing.
Fantastic story. that is a story. Do you have anything to add to that one, Barney, before we move on?
No, that's the greatest thing I've ever heard. I mean, I've been in a million games with, you know, with red line interactions, guys jawing, poking at each other, shooting pucks at each other's ankles, but no, nothing to, no super brawls or anything like that.
What if someone pinned him and took the belt? That's what I want to know.
That would have been the highlight of hockey forever.
What is that, the Money in the Bank, where there's you got to defend the belt at all times?
That's right, yeah, you walk around with the belt in the suitcase and you got to defend at a moment's notice. all right, more on the Islanders Tampa series, the bottom of the hour with John Bartlett. Meantime, game one tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern, pregame at 8:30. It is the Vegas Golden Knights against the Montreal Canadiens in what looks like, and again, I stress, looks like, should be a lopsided affair. When you try to handicap this one and break it all down and figure it all out, it really does look like this is a series that shouldn't be happening. But it is. It is because of a lot of things. A big Montreal defense, timely scoring from players like Nick Suzuki, some good play from a rookie like Cole Caulfield, Jesperi Kotkaniemi. But most of all, some superior play by Carey Price. How do we even begin to look at this one before the puck drops? Or, Justin, is it a game where you look at and you say, I don't know that I want to bet against Montreal here. I understand that it may look like a tilted rink when we just read everything about this. But then that little rubber black thing is going to hit the ice, and things tend to happen in hockey, which you can't really explain. How do you see tonight?
Well, it is something I want to bet on, and I do want to bet against Montreal. but that said, you know, people forget, I think sometimes, that hockey is not a sport that lends itself to like outright one-sided dominance often. You know, if you are committed to playing tight defense and everyone's in their positions, it's really hard to score against a team doing that. So it's not like Montreal is going to get run off the rink or anything, but I expect that the advantages a team like Vegas enjoys, which are present throughout the lineup, I expect that over the course of the game for them to, you know, find their way ahead. In most hockey games, I've lived to regret this so far betting against the Habs, but I think it should take about five or six games here, probably five, for Vegas to find their way by.
Stewie,
yeah, I don't think it's that big of a pushover the Vegas Golden Knights. I think they're favorite, but I don't think it's going to be an easy series. And why I say that, because I think there's a couple of forwards on Montreal that could still take their game to another level. I don't think they've peaked, and guys like Toffoli and Caulfield and Anderson, maybe even Gallagher too. So say Anderson turns to be an Alex Tuck. What if he's the Alex Tuck of the last series? I think that gives them a really, really good advantage. So I think for Montreal, they got to have a little bit more discipline. They can play that heavy game, but I think the issue now is with that pushback with Vegas, I think they can get into penalty trouble as well too. So I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think. But if Carey Price does what Carey Price normally does or is used to doing, I think it's not going to be a blowout in any sense of the word.
Thing is, right now, if you look at the goaltending, as much as we talk about Carey Price and he's been exceptional, ditto for Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, and we talk about Montreal and we say, you know, Philip Deneau has done a tremendous job so far suppressing any elite level player that's been placed in front of him. And so is Mark Stone, who may be the most complete NHL player going right now, period. If this one comes down to depth, you're going to go clearly with the Vegas Golden Knights. To me, the goaltending is a pick'em, considering how both these netminders are playing. Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, where is this series going to be won? Is it going to be won on the blue line? Is it going to be won by offense from the blue line? Is it going to be won by
the
transition?
Crowd.
Like, or is it going to be won by the crowd? Hang on, Stewie. Like, there's something there. Like, that Vegas crowd is berserk. And I know that Montreal's crowd, even though it's meek by numbers, is loud and, you know, all these ghosts of the forum and all the mystique of Montreal always comes into it. But still, man, like, that is such a huge advantage for the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, it has been such a home run at every single level for that organization since the expansion draft. I don't know, Borny, what do you think? How much of a factor are fans here in packed houses in Vegas at T-Mobile?
Well, you know, Jeff, I think, if anything, they should provide a little spark to Montreal. I was won by Stewie's point last week where he talked about getting to play in front of a big crowd when you don't normally, and you get some juice from it as the road team. Now, that said, my thing in this series is, like, where are the goals coming from Montreal? Vegas gave up the least goals in the NHL. They're the best defensive team in the NHL. Montreal already doesn't score a ton of goals. Yeah. I just don't know if they can get enough offense to beat Vegas four times.
Stewie?
Yeah, this is the analogy that came to mind for me. It's like in Rocky IV where Drago's fighting Apollo Creed and, like, the crowd's all crazy. Everyone's dancing around, so it's more like a show than a performance. So I could see them being stunned for a little bit, but not the whole entire game, where I could see them getting overwhelmed for the first 5-10 minutes, but I could see them settling down after that, like Drago did.
That is a wonderful analogy. There's a couple of sidebars here. Like, we're going to hear a lot about the Pacioretty-Suzuki deal. Take that to the bank. We've already mentioned Carey Price versus Marc-Andre Fleury. That's kind of an easy one as well. You know, and how these teams were constructed. Like, Vegas to me is such a fascinating team because we keep hearing that, you know, you need to do it along your blue line and down the middle of the ice. Chandler Stephenson, William Karlsson, Nicholas Waugh, Keegan Kolasar. These are good hockey players, but I don't think that if you went to any manager and said, we're going to win the Stanley Cup and these are going to be our four centers, they would look at you and say, yeah, I can see that. Like the fascinating thing about Vegas to me is how much more they are built along the boards, like on the wings up front, than they are down the middle. It's a freakish team. It's a freakish team, man.
Yeah, it's super unique, isn't it? That's Stephenson has been an underrated guy, but yeah, you still don't think of him as like a top line center in the league. I just think their decor is so good. You know, like the addition of Petrangelo there with Shea Theodore. What a couple of players they are. Alec Martinez is so good. They're just so good. Throughout that whole group, it really makes things easier for the forwards.
What do you think, Stewie?
Yeah, and I think one of the factors, I think, for the Montreal Canadiens that people aren't really, you know, keeping in mind is they're not afraid to get to the net. You saw with Colorado, their problem was they were trying to kill you off the fly, trying to kill you off the flank, Makar across the line, trying to get shots on net. Montreal, I think, are probably one of the best teams in the league in getting those second and third opportunities. Gallagher standing on the crease, Perry's in the crease, Stahl's down low. So below the dots, I think, is an advantage I think Montreal can have in the offensive zone. And if they, sort of isolate that and really focus on that, I think they can bang in a couple goals, because with Fleury, as athletic as he is, he comes across and he's just so much power. Sometimes there's a lot of juicy rebounds there for the second and third opportunity. So I think if they really focus in on that, that can help keep them in some of these games.
So if the Vegas Golden Knights get past the Montreal Canadiens in this series, regardless of what happens tonight, if they get past the Montreal Canadiens in this series, then Pete DeBoer will have taken three different teams to the Stanley Cup final: the New Jersey Devils, the San Jose Sharks, and now the Vegas Golden Knights. When we think about elite level coaches in the NHL, top bench bosses, the top guys in the National Hockey League, why do we so seldom mention Peter DeBoer? Is he not one of the best coaches in the league? And wouldn't this just be the
old Stanley Cup bias, right?
Because you haven't won it?
Right, I think so. But no, he consistently has teams and makes them better. There's no doubt about it. And this team makes adjustments really good. He's done an excellent job with them, and he almost seems built to coach to this roster.
What do you think, Stewie? Last word to you.
DeBoer. He's the one thing I could say about DeBoer is he's not necessarily a player's coach, but he's prepared, and there's not a more prepared coach. And even Steve Spott, he's got a drill book, I'm telling you, probably 1,000 pages. So they're prepared. They do video. They make adjustments. So the science behind hockey, I know it's a lot of people don't really buy into that, but they buy into that. So I know a lot of the coaching's about relationships, but from a preparation standpoint, there's not a more prepared coach in the National Hockey League.
Should be a good one. Tonight, it is game one between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Montreal Canadiens. Pregame 8:30 puck drops just after 9 o'clock at T-Mobile Arena. Meanwhile, we'll step away, get back on the Islanders' Tampa page. Oh, one thing we should mention as well, this Dougie Hamilton situation. Carolina, as Elliot Friedman reports, allowing Dougie Hamilton and his camp to talk to teams. Yes, that does introduce the possibility of a sign and trade, so that could turn a 7-year deal into an 8. We'll get on that page a little bit later on. But back talking about the Islanders and the Tampa Bay Lightning here as Hockey Central continues. John Bartlett, play-by-play voice of the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada, joins us in moments. Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a moment. We are standing by for John Bartlett. When he arrives, we will let you know and bring him on. Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're here Monday to Friday starting at noon. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us today alongside Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart. I'm Jeff Merrick. We're going to get back on the Islanders Tampa page here, but really quickly, a thought on what's happening with the Carolina Hurricanes. And for the purposes of this market, when you consider the nature of this defenseman and how this organization thinks, not that they necessarily have the cap space right away to make it happen, but Justin Bourne, should the Maple Leafs be interested in pursuing Dougie Hamilton, whom the Carolina Hurricanes have allowed to talk to other teams? He is on an expiring contract. He will be a UFA. Before we get to Bart's, quick thought on that one, Borny.
You know how it is. Everyone looking at the Tampa Bay. Oh my goodness, the Toronto Maple Leafs cap sheet, and there saying, you know what they need is another huge number and another long term deal. that hasn't come up yet. They would love to have him, I'm sure, but boy, I don't think that is a cure for what ails him right now.
More on this one in a couple of moments. Sean Bartlett joins us from Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. How are you today, Barts?
I'm very good, guys. How are you?
We are doing well. We're just talking about the Islanders in Tampa to kick off the program, and whether it was the center ice exchanges between Ross Johnston and Patrick Maroon, whether it was the Bailey pass to Barzal, whether it's Ryan Pulock, you know, showing why he's got one of the hardest shots in the entire NHL, whether it was stifling the Tampa Bay Lightning rush. What stood out for John Bartlett from yesterday's game?
I think John Cooper kind of said it best after the game. The Lightning were there, but they were off. They weren't completely in sync. Now, that's not to take anything away from the Islanders and the way they've been playing through these Stanley Cup playoffs. But I think that, you know, first time meeting each other this season, you've got the rematch of last year. So there's some animosity. There's some unfinished business. There's players like Casey Zizekas that was injured and didn't get to play in all of the conference final last year. The Islanders, I think, have a little chip on their shoulder with this. So part of that in the warm-up, I think, was trying to set the tone for this as well. And show, you know, Tampa, hey, they're the big team, they're the defending champions, but we're here to play. We're here to try and take you out. So I think it was a little bit of a mix on that. One of the stories I find fascinating between these two teams and how they've got to this third round of the Stanley Cup playoffs here in the semifinals, and you look at the game winner yesterday with Pulock getting the game winner, that was the sixth goal from Islanders defense in the playoffs. Tampa Bay has not got a goal from their blue line yet, and that includes Victor Hedman. And Hedman had 27 shots going into yesterday, and I don't remember off the top of my head how many he had in the game, but I think that's fascinating between those two teams. Even without all that offense and all the great power play success for Tampa, no goals from the back end. And you've got six from the Islanders. They're so spread out with the way that they try to compete offense. So it was a pretty interesting game one.
Yeah, the Lightning seem to be heavily dependent on power play, and they haven't really been scoring a lot of goals 5-on-5. So do you think they're going to have a chance in this series against an Islanders team who doesn't take a lot of penalties if they're reliant so much on the power play?
Yeah, you're right. They've got to get them to 5-on-5. And the interesting part is, even on the road matchup, the Pajot line was out against the Yanni Gord line a lot. And, you know, Jean-Gabriel Pajot has been a great story for the Islanders in these playoffs, and especially the way he handled Bergeron, the perfection line for Boston in round two. So for Tampa to try and get some 5-on-5 goals, that's going to be big. And especially the way the Islanders like to play. And you give them a lead, and boy, they're comfortable with a one-goal lead, and a two-goal lead sounds, you know, for the Islanders is something they're really comfortable with. So they've got to find a way, you're right, to get through in the 5-on-5 department. And I thought that the Braden Point line, although Point had that goal late there on the power play with the net empty, I thought that line could have brought more. And that's probably what John Cooper was alluding to as well, that they were just out of sync a little yesterday. So I think Tampa will find a way to get through in the 5-on-5 department and make it a little tougher for the Islanders from that standpoint. But you're right, New York's got to stay out of the box because Tampa can kill them on the power play alone if they get their opportunities.
Just thinking of that 5-on-5 play, you know, Cooper made comments that said they had their effort and they, you know, they just didn't have their mental game. Was there a lot of visible mistakes from Tampa Bay in that game, or was it just such an utter devoid of mistakes from the Islanders? It's sort of like do you give credit to the Islanders or take away from Tampa for how it went?
Well, you're right. I think you have to give credit to both. You know, the Islanders have played some really strong defense throughout the playoffs. They're really good with their stick positioning. They're really good with, you know, trying to bog down the star players and especially giving them trouble through the neutral zone. So I think that's been a big factor. But I did see a lot of plays where Tampa just, you know, the passes were off the skate. The passes were not tape to tape. They were a little behind, a little out of step. So part of that is when the Islanders start pressuring you that way, you start overthinking those things. And how do we get through this? How do we get around this? And maybe you try to get a little too fancy at times. Tampa is a team that can play very skilled east-west hockey as much as north-south. And maybe in trying to get through the Islanders' defensive scheme, maybe they tried to get a little too complicated in their east-west hockey and that's where it created a little bit of trouble for them. So for Tampa, I think they just have to get back to sticking with their pace and try and play their pace. There were a few shifts yesterday where you thought, oh, here they come. And I think it was in the second period, one particular shift I remember, the Lightning just seemed to have it. They had the Islanders hemmed in their zone, and they were just circling around them like bees, and just they couldn't get the goal. But that's where you got the sense that they were clicking, and here we go, and they weren't able to get it. But they couldn't sustain that through the game. So I think that's where, you know, you get those passes on, you're a little crisp, you're a little sharper, and they sustain that, and then that'll be some trouble for the Islanders to handle when Tampa can come at them full force like that.
You know, it's not a team, this Islander squad, that has, you know, outside of Matthew Barzal, who's a pretty flashy player on a team of, like, just really good, solid hockey players who play a very simple and effective game and just roll over teams. There's not a whole lot of flash that comes along with the Islanders. And maybe that's one of the reasons why, you know, come Norris balloting, we don't talk about a player like Adam Pellick a whole lot. Talk to teammates, talk to people that have played with him, played against him, and most recently, certainly in the last few years, you know, there's someone that belongs in that conversation with some of the best defensemen in the NHL. What do you see specifically in Adam Pellick and how he's used by Barry Trotz?
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. He quietly is under the radar on that team from that standpoint, and he's been so good against the top lines of all the teams that he's played throughout the season, and now I think when you get into the postseason here, you see it a little more in depth. There's you know, more intensity and more eyes on every single play and how things go. So Pellick has just showed, he's just showed poise. He's strong on the puck. You're right. The best way to describe it, and that's probably why he goes under the radar a little. There's nothing flashy about his game. He's a defensive defenseman that gets the job done. And he's, you know, he's hard on other players. He makes it difficult to try and get around. He makes it difficult to try and get pucks through the passing lane. And I think that's, you know, it's strong elements of his game. And really, that's why he fits in the mold of the New York Islanders. That's the team as a whole, really, when you look at how Barry Trotz has the team play. And Pellick, I think, is the epitome of that, for just, you know, the strong, silent type that gets the job done without making a lot of noise. And he's been great for the Islanders, and especially him with Pullock. The two of them have been a dynamite pair for New York. And you know, I know you talk about Barzal too. Now, Barzal, you know, we've heated up a little bit here with the 4 goals in the last 5 games now, but it's also been scoring by committee. Who would have guessed going into the playoffs that Kyle Palmieri would be the leading goal scorer of the New York Islanders in the third round? Like, they've been so spread out, and they have this four-line attack. They really have an identity to their team that I think is tough to play against, but you never know who's going to contribute on any given night. And as we've seen through their history, especially with Barry Trotz as head coach, in each series, you never know who the hero of that series will be and who the standout player will be. And really, it's been a different one each time for New York.
What are your thoughts on Varlamov and the adversity that he went through, from getting, you know, pulled midway through the first round and to letting in the goal in overtime against Boston? How do you rate his bounce back, and how has he been playing lately?
Yeah, he was solid last night. I thought he made a couple big stops early on that could have got the Lightning going a little and gave the Islanders some confidence. You know, I think he struggled in that one. Kelly Rudy made a great sort of analysis of this last night in the game, showing the overtime goal he struggled that beat him on the odd angle over the glove, and you know, how he had his leg outside the post, a little double coverage on the outside of that. So he just made some adjustments here. Now you see he's tighter on that, skates against the post, blocking a little more. So he's made even some adjustments here within the playoffs that I think has helped his game even more. And he's been strong. And, I mean, you think of the fact that Sorokin was the one that won the first-round series against the Penguins, and now Varlamov has come in and taken out the Bruins and now has to face Tampa. And to be able to come back from that and have the tough start and now be giving some solid goaltending, I think there's a lot of confidence in him from the Islanders team. And you know, he was really good, I thought, yesterday. You can't really fault him on the point goal. That was a heck of a lot of traffic in front. But I thought he made a lot of key saves yesterday that just kept everything calm for the Islanders. So he's had a great bounce back.
John, you watch and talk your way through a ton of hockey each year. What are your thoughts when you hear the Islanders called a boring hockey team? Are people right?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Barry Trotz has got a great way of that team just sort of, you know, bogging things down, taking care of things defensively. And, hey, the Islanders, they love 2-1 games. That's their bread and butter to do it that way. I know. Are they boring? I don't know if they're boring if you're winning. I think what they do is they play strong strategic hockey. I wouldn't say they're as boring as the, you know, the trap days of the New Jersey Devils. I think they've got some excitement to them. I think especially when they're at home in the old barn at the Coliseum, that's an experience on its own, especially in the playoffs. And, you know, they talk about that fourth line, the identity line of Martin, Cizikas, and Clutterbuck, and the way they'll go out and bang and crash and create opportunities. And then, you know, Barzal might be the entertaining scorer. And then you've got sort of more of a blue-collar team. So I don't know if they're boring as much as they're just not as flashy. They're just a hard, blue-collar working team that plays the right way, but their coach has got set out. They're very tough to play against. They're very strong defensively, and then they try and jump on their opportunities, and they play a very heavy game, you know? And when we talk about heavy game, it's being hard on the puck. It's being physical when you can. The fourth line does a lot of that. And I think when you play the New York Islanders, you come out after a game against them, and you're feeling it. And so it's not so much trap boring. I think it's just they're just a solid blue-collar team, and they know that if they want to win, it's going to be by committee, and that's how they have to play, and that's what they do, and it leads to success. And yeah, when they're at home especially, it's a ton of fun because the crowd's going crazy, and they love it, and it's got a really special atmosphere to it. So it's got this unique, mystique charm to them, and who knows what kind of a story they're trying to write now in the final season of the old building, too. So a lot of memories in there, and the fans are hoping to, you know, add an extra chapter onto this book if they can on that building. So it's got a little mystique to it, and I think it's not too much boring. I think it makes them a little entertaining to watch, and the fact that how hard they have to work as a group to pull it off.
Let me ask you about a little bit about the building here. We're talking to John Bartlett, play-by-play voice for Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. It's 1-0 Islanders after winning yesterday 2-1 over the Tampa Bay Lightning. You work with Gary Galley. Gary may have only played the 1 year with the New York Islanders, but what has he been able to share with you about that one season with you? This is the Marius Tchaikovsky era, by the way, for those who don't know, of the Islanders. What has he shared, if anything, with you about his time with the Islanders?
Well, the most we usually talk about with that is you know, of course, the time in the building and the fans, right? Because that's what it really comes down to. It's all about the fans in New York, and they're a different breed, and they're unique to the Islanders, and I think that's what makes it special. And with the building, and you know, we both talked about the tailgating. Of course, it starts, and as the playoffs go on, it seems to start earlier and earlier in the daytime in the parking lot out there. But there's a unique, there really is. There's a unique feel to it. I remember, you know, if you think back to when Carolina had their big cup runs, and everyone was talking about the tailgate parties that were going on in Carolina. Well, that's basically what goes on with the Islanders. There's some fans that come in with these mini buses, and they're rolling in the afternoon, and they've got the barbecues going, they've got the beanbag toss games, and it's a whole event leading up to the game, and then going into this small building, low roof, where it's incredibly noisy, and everyone's on top of you, and they have songs and chants to sing, and you know, if they're singing for Josh Bailey, or and they're sharp, they get onto these things, and you know, chanting New York Saints the last game because of the war of words with Trotz and Cassidy. Yeah, so I think that's what Gals talks about too. It's there's an experience to it, and I really thought when you go back to the 2019 playoffs 2 years ago when the Islanders swept the Penguins, and then the second round they faced Carolina, and they moved to Brooklyn for the second round. And I thought that, and then they were swept by Carolina. I really thought the Islanders lost their home ice advantage there. They tried to replicate it. It wasn't the same. The music was trying to go loud, but it was drowning out the crowd. It lost that whole home ice feel to the Coliseum. And I know they're looking forward to their new building at Belmont Park coming in the fall, and it looks spectacular. But you just have to wonder, is this the last, you know, the end of an era for this kind of a crowd, this kind of a feeling, a vibe, a building, a story? And they've got something going there that's really different. I don't know if they're going to be able to carry that over to Belmont, but that's what's so unique about it. And anyone that's had a chance to see a game at the Coliseum, even now with it renovated and fixed up, it's a nicer version of what it was, but it's still the same. You know, it's that low roof that they're on top of you, and it's a really unique atmosphere, and the fans are what make it.
Those fans are outstanding and some of the most creative in the entire NHL. We're up against the clock. Oh, right. We're up against it, John. We always appreciate this. Enjoy the remainder of this series. Fun one to call, specifically when you have the sidebar of what they're saying at the Coliseum. All the best, my good friend. We'll check you out pretty soon, a little bit later on.
You bet. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There he is, John Bartlett, play-by-play voice for Hockey in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. We'll have Barts on again as this series continues, and who knows? We'll see how the Islanders continue in the Stanley Cup playoffs. 2-1 winners yesterday against the Tampa Bay Lightning. They claim a 1-0 series lead. We're pressed. We're back in a moment. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Okay, so there seems to be, for the past however many years, a thought around the NHL that the one position you shouldn't overpay in is goaltending. Yeah, don't go reaching for $10 million for your goaltenders. It's not worth it. Michael Amato just put this tweet out a couple of moments ago. He does a lot with goaltenders, writes for Dauber Hockey as well. Three of the final four teams rank in the top five when it comes to the biggest total cap hit for goaltending. Number one, Montreal Canadiens at 14.9. Vegas, $12 million. Tampa, $10.8 million. Also in there, Florida at number three, just over $10 million. And Boston, just a shy shade underneath 10. So tonight, it'll be Carey Price and Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury, of course, as we know, could have been had once upon a time if you were talking to the Vegas Golden Knights, maybe by Pittsburgh. We know they made a play. Carey Price facing off against Marc-Andre Fleury. Justin Bourne, you go first. What do we look for tonight in game one?
Well, you know, is Montreal able to get offense? You know, this is it was a struggle for them in the regular season. Didn't score a ton against Toronto, but got just enough offense. Winnipeg was kind of a little more porous defensively, but can they get through a Vegas team that is as good as any team in the NHL at limiting offense?
Stewie, you've gone 60 minutes without saying anything about Corey Perry. Go for it.
Well, I think he's scoring tonight, but I think special teams are going to be special for the Montreal Canadiens. I could see this game going overtime.
Oh, keeping us up late tonight. That's Anthony Stewart. Enjoy game one, everybody. It is the Montreal Canadiens facing off against the Vegas Golden Knights. Pre-game Hockey Central with your host, Ron McLean, underway at 8:30. Puck drops at T-Mobile Arena just after 9. Canada's hope, the Habs, facing off against the Vegas Golden Knights. Enjoy it. We're back tomorrow.